Welcome, Capital Raisers. Mike Guthrie joins us today to talk shop on how he went from the ATM business to syndicating multifamily and the journey he took from being a passive investor in Brad Sumrock's community to being a GP partner with him. Mike accidentally became a capital raiser, and then he learned to take it to the next level. Are you guys ready to raise? If you'd like to explore partnerships with me, talk shop on capital raising, or explore our new capital mentorship program, use the scheduling link in the show notes. With that, it's Capital Raiser Show episode 269, and it starts now. Rock and roll. I got Michael Guthrie on the Capital Raiser Show. Welcome to the show, dude. How you doing, brother?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you, Ruben, for having me.
Yeah, dude, this is going to be a lot of fun, man. Before we get started, I got to give a shout out to Richard Wilson, Capital Raiser Show Season 3, brought to you by his company, PitchDecks.com. So really appreciate working with those guys. For the audience that doesn't know you, man, let's jump right into your background, brother. How did you get into this space called capital raising and multifamily syndication and value add and stuff?
I own an ATM company. I've owned that for 27 years. And me and my wife have always looked for ways to diversify our income and have a great place to park some money and have great tax advantages. And literally 3 years ago, after being in the business for 27 years, we finally stumbled onto something called multifamily real estate. Learned of the tax advantages of doing that. And the interesting thing is we'd meet with our CPA every year in June and in October to find out if there's any tax planning things we could do to avoid paying the maximum amount of tax at the end of every year. He's like, you're doing everything. You've got the 401k, you've got the IRA, you've got the defined benefit or pension plan is what they call it. You're doing everything. And then we found out about multifamily. We shared this information with him and he goes, well, you got to be a real estate professional. And since we own our own company, we took me off of payroll so that I could become the real estate professional. And my wife's still running the company. I still work there a little bit part-time, but she's running the company. And now I'm the real estate professional. I'm out investing in properties. That's how we got started. Literally, he got all the K-1s, the three or four K-1s that year one, and almost reduced our taxes to zero. And that's when I knew he wasn't really our guy because he wasn't the one taking me to the next level. I'm taking him to the next level and helping him. And he's like, how did you figure out this multifamily thing? He goes, I've heard it been getting a lot of traction. And this is what really got me because it's been getting a lot of traction for the last 10 years. He says, it's been getting traction for 10 years. I go, how many years have we been doing business together? And he goes, like 15. I go, and you didn't think this might be something for us? So we ended up parting ways. And the interesting thing is he lives two doors down. He's my neighbor. We don't talk anymore. It's not because we're mad at him. And he said, you've outgrown me. And when we figured out who our new tax professionals were, they're actually teaching us things on better ways to avoid taxation by doing other opportunities. I get back to your question. We were investing in the multifamily space.
As a passive investor.
And I got into probably 12 or 13 deals as a passive investor. And then I got asked to raise on one deal. Had no idea what I was doing. Had no idea I even had the chops to do this. I just started texting people. I got my little cell phone. Hey, we're going to be buying this building and we're going to be fundraising for it in about 35, 40 days. If this has interest of you, please just enter your email down below and I will add you to my mailing list. And by the time I got to the G's, I had about $6 or $7 million committed. I don't need to go any further. I just added the rest of my database to my email list, started priming the pump a little bit by sending out some nurturing emails to them. And on our first capital raise in 3 days, we raised $5.6 million.
Bam. You say we. Who else was you raising with?
I say we because me and my wife own the ATM company and me and my wife own the properties company. I always include her because she's my backbone. Without her, I'm not who I am.
I know, right? They definitely need to get some credit for everything that they do. All right. So I'm confused about one thing though. And I guess we haven't really dove deep into this. And for somebody that's not educated too highly on the real estate professional tax exemption, what is the difference between the amount of tax that you can get? I don't know that you always need that or not. What did you find out about? Does it make sense to become the real estate professional for taxes? Or is it more about the multifamily and the passive and active and the cost segregation and those types of things where you really get the benefit?
That's a great question. We have a ton of active income on our ATM company.
Yeah, I bet.
So for me, I had to become a real estate professional. So all my depreciation that comes from the cost segregation and the bonus depreciation could actually offset my wife's active income. We were paying almost seven figures in tax on the ATM company annually. And for the last 3 years in a row, I've paid zero tax. I won't pay tax in 2023 just based on the carry forward depreciation we already have banked compared to the amount of income that comes in on the ATM company.
What about the real estate professional? Does that help at all? Do you need that?
To qualify for your depreciation to go against an active income of your spouse, you have to be a real estate professional. Otherwise, you're passive. And I'm not a CPA.
Right.
I play one on TV, but I'm not CPA. So please talk to your CPA. Don't take my advice. Get theirs. For us in our family, I had to be the real estate professional in order to offset my wife's active income. If it was just passive income versus a passive depreciation loss, you don't have to be a professional to do that. And passive can cancel each other out. But passive versus active, you have to be the real estate professional to get that to cancel it out.
Okay, cool. Very cool. So when you found out about multifamily, somebody sent you an email and I'm not sure if they specifically said, hey, can you raise capital for us? Or how did they intrigue you to potentially raise for them?
I belong to a program in an ecosystem where I'd been putting money into those people's deals. So when we found out about multifamily, me and my wife immediately joined a mentorship group and a mastermind to learn more about what we were going to invest our money in, because we're not just going to blindly throw our money at an opportunity. And then we wanted to work with the best people in that group. So we went from being personal mentoring students to actually joining the mastermind, which was their highest level at the time, so that we could be around the people that have been doing this the longest and doing it the best and work through multiple market conditions to actually return funds and bring your money back with its friends and actually multiply your investment.
Is that someone that you're still studying with or still working with?
I am still working with them very closely.
I'd love to know who it is, just out of curiosity.
I didn't know if you want me to advertise here, but
yeah, we'd love to talk about people. We're all interested, right? I think particularly for the audience, the scaling syndicator or somebody that wants to know what's available. We probably covered like 30 or 40 different gurus, the capital raising programs, the full-blown mentors, the marketing specialist, all of them. So I like to talk about them.
I met Brad Sumrock at the Brad Sumrock in the Tony Robbins Platinum Partnership Program. I'd found out what he did about a year in, and I started to pursue him and ask him more questions. He said, I get this all the time. Nobody ever does anything with it. And I go, well, try me. So he gave me his home study course. I handed it off to my wife because I was busy operating the ATM company. She went through it. He then sent her a link. This was just towards the end of September 2020, he sent her a link to his AIM.com, his Apartment Investor Mastery Program or seminar. And so she watched that. I'd spent all day at the warehouse, cleaning up my warehouse, getting ready for events with our ATM company. And I get home and she's like, Bradley, I got all these notes. I took four pages of notes. Grant Cardone was on. He talked about this and everybody's doing this. And she was like literally excited. And it's hard to get her excited about anything. But she goes, I got it. This is what we're going to do. And that's how we got started. So we immediately joined Brad's personal mentoring program. We joined his foundations program. We actually were in Dallas or in New Braunfels, Texas, doing a Date with Destiny virtual because it was during COVID. And Brad's like, I'm having my Christmas party this weekend. You should come. And I go, great. Send me an invite. He sends me an invoice for $8,000 to join his foundations program because he goes, it's a fulfillment event for students of mine. So I paid the $8,000 to go to a Christmas party. And then I sat around the room and I met all these amazing people. We got on buses. We toured some properties, listened to some brokers talk about properties. I met a really great gentleman, Charlie Young from Madera Residential. They own about 18,000 of their own unit in the Texas area. And he's become a good friend over the last 3 years. And January, we bumped up from foundations to personal mentoring. In February, we joined the mastermind. And July of 2021 was my first capital raise.
Fantastic. I actually just released a show with Brad, and then he invited me to come out to his event out in Dallas, which is by the time this airs, I'll have already been gone and come back. I've had a lot of his students come through on the show. So Zach Haptonstall, Sandhya Seshadri, Rebecca Moore. I can't even remember who else. It's been a whole bunch of the guys are a lot of you guys have a lot of success. And then I suppose he's created a bunch of different millionaires through his programs. So I'm really excited about
it. It's interesting. The names you mentioned, Rebecca Moore, I met her literally after I walked in the house and my wife had been going crazy with the documents. I logged into the same AIMNetCon and I got in a chat box on the Zoom and I met Rebecca Moore there. 5 days later, I gave her $50,000 for my very first multifamily investment. So it's funny you mentioned Rebecca Moore. And then who else did I start my first capital raise with?
I was just mentioning some of the students that have gone through.
And Sandhya
on the show.
Sandhya Seshadri was the one that invited me onto the team that I did my first capital raise with.
Oh, check you out. Okay. She's
so
great.
Funny. Yeah, two firsts, and you mentioned both of their names. So I just thought it was kismet, and I should expand on that a little bit.
Fantastic. So Sandhya reached out to you on the first capital raise, and then you didn't raise from the ecosystem, Brad's ecosystem. You raised from your own ATM database of people that you were connected with. Is that correct so far?
I actually raised inside the Sumrock system.
Okay.
I actually raised from ATM partners. I raised from Platinum Partners and Tony Robbins. I raised from family and friends in my neighborhood.
So how did you connect with all the people in Tony Robbins' program?
I was in the Tony Robbins Platinum Partnership that I was in. That was during my second year. We had done a lot of virtual events together and we met a lot of people online. And then we were actually doing virtual events in person at different Platinum Partners offices. We'd all fly to a city, rent 50 hotel rooms and then come to somebody's office. And we'd sit around big, huge TVs and do the events together because it's hard to do these things alone and actually stay focused. So we decided if we're going to do this and do it right, we needed to go to somebody's office. We'd order in catering. We'd be there for 12, 14 hours a day doing these events. And it was just amazing how we all came together as friends.
I bet. That's the power of the mastermind. That's really cool. You did your first deal with Sandhya. So tell me about what's happened and transpired since then.
So we closed that first deal July 21 of 2021. And I've done 11 more syndications through December of 2022, where we've raised a little over $62 million across all 12 deals.
Crazy. Damn, you scaled really quickly, man.
It's a little mind blowing. I have it all on paper on a spreadsheet and how I've done it. And I have a one pager that Richard Wilson helped me develop. He's actually a friend of mine. I rode back with him from an event literally a month ago in first class back to Phoenix. So Richard's become a pretty decent friend of mine.
Yeah, I can say the same thing. He's fantastic. We're getting ready to write a book together.
Awesome.
Okay, cool. So the value add, obviously there's some crazy things going on, some economic calamities and lending seems like almost a crisis, I suppose. How is this affecting your business for capital raising? Because you're a value add. Is this pretty much all that you do is the multifamily value add, or are you looking at other asset classes?
Right now, I'm only raising in the multifamily class of value add. I did two deals in December where a couple of teams had really come to a stop. One team needed $4 million and another team needed $2.5 million. And they brought me in at the end and I helped them get over the hump. The good news is a lot of people still have cash that's sitting out there and they're looking to deploy it. People are still employed, making money, doing things where they want to get their money out there working for them. And as long as you're bringing them value or they feel that you're bringing them value and you're there and you're available for them to talk to, they're going to give you their money.
These people that brought you in at the end, I'm assuming that you had a pre-existing relationship. You knew them pretty well. Like they didn't just call you out of the blue and say, "Hey, we're raising capital. Can you help us?"
That's a great question because I actually chasing a deal with another team. And the folks that I came in at the end with, they had pitched me to come in on their deal at the beginning.
Okay.
I had reviewed their underwriting, both of them. It was really interesting. I had reviewed and I had to tell them no, because I was working with another team chasing a different deal. And literally this was in late October. We were chasing a deal and the seller comes on. We get at a seller call and he comes on and he says, "I'm not going to close this till into January." Well, I had already primed investors for that deal. And they wanted a deal in 2022.
Tax benefits, probably.
For the tax benefits. So you still got 100% bonus depreciation. So when that deal fell through, I just put my name back out there in the field, Sumrock ecosystem, that I was available looking for a couple of deals because I had investors looking for places to park money. And lo and behold, I got the phone calls and we got those two deals closed mid-December.
He was on my show recently and he talked about when people have success raising capital. It's kind of funny because you hear some people say, hey, December is not a good time to raise capital because people are like on holiday mode and they're not paying attention and they're hard to get on the phone and whatnot. And then Brad's like, that's the best time because people are looking to park their money so that they can capitalize on the tax benefit. So depending on who you're talking to, they might give you a completely different perspective of when is the right time to raise capital.
In my short experience, I haven't been doing it 22 years like Brad has, but in my short experience, Q4 is the best time to raise. Q1 has been the worst.
Fascinating. Okay, cool. So you've done value add. What markets are you investing? Are they all in Texas? Are they around the country?
I'm investing in Sunbelt, Texas, Arizona, Alabama. Me and Brad actually bought a building together in July in Tennessee, about a $20 million raise. We did that in about 10 days. And we bought in Alabama, if I said that, and then also in Florida. We're staying in the Sunbelt area in landlord and business friendly states so that we can operate our business plan and actually help people where people are actually moving to. We try to follow the heat map from U-Haul to see where people are moving to.
The migratory patterns.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So there are certain states that are tax-free for in terms of income and other places that are landlord friendly and have insane migratory patterns. So all those places are fantastic for investing. What do you see the future as, you know, in terms of what you're going to invest in? Are you going to continue to do value add?
I'm going to continue to do value add. I'm actually looking at some carbon capture, which is giving a really great depreciation mechanism. And the way those are working, you're not having to recapture the depreciation, according to what I've been told. Check with your CPA on that one. I have to give that disclosure. I'm looking at mobile home parks and maybe some self-storage.
Okay. Okay, self-storage is a great alternative to value add. We actually are in the build-to-rent space, and we consider it horizontal multifamily. One leasing agent, one property manager. Only difference is everything is detached instead of built vertically on top of each other. So we like that asset class, but self-storage is great. We like mobile home parks as well. So we'll see. Maybe when the time is right, we'll invest in some of those other asset classes ourselves. All right. So I'm curious about the capital raising that you've experienced so far. Are you doing the exact same thing? Has your capital raising evolved since you started? What have you learned along the way?
I've learned that you need to communicate. And I think one of the things that came to me in January, we were at a conference in Scottsdale and Bob Goff, a great author, came and spoke. I was there with Brandon Turner from Bigger Pockets. Bob Goff's words were, be available. If you look at any of his books, in the back page of his books is his actual email and his actual cell phone. I know for me, and in speaking with my friend I just mentioned, if you're available to your investors when they call, you answer the phone, or if you can't answer it, you call them right back. You actually communicate with them on a regular basis, not only when you need funds. Mm-hmm. The funds come a lot easier. And I think so many people get caught up in, they invested with me before, I can just send them an email, they'll invest with me again. And I don't think that's how it's going to always happen. I think those who have the actual relationships with those folks that have the money and actually will give up their own personal time to share their time with the investor, you're going to get more investment out of them in the long haul.
So the people that you're talking to that are not already familiar with multifamily, i.e. the Tony Robbins guys or the ATM guys, what kind of conversations are you having with them? What are you communicating to them to let them know about the tax benefits and other benefits of multifamily?
I basically just share my journey, what my frustrations were, because they have the same frustrations in high income and high tax bills. And they're trying to mitigate that while also putting their money, not only having their money working inside their ATMs or in their business, but putting their money to work outside of that. So you're not always just sitting on cash. For me, it was always frustrating that I had high bills and I had the 401k that we maxed out every year. I had the SEP IRA and the pension plan, but those were only growing at 3%, 4%, 5%. Then you have your manager that takes his point or point and a half fee out of that. And you ended up with a 3.5%, 4% return on your money. And I felt like I was actually losing money instead of actually gaining ground. So I wasn't even keeping up with inflation is the way I was looking at it. So the conversation I have is I share my frustration on what I went through and where I was and how I got to where I am today. And then they can see themselves in you, and that makes them want to come alongside you.
Yeah, that makes sense. What have you learned about communication infrastructure? Like, how often are you reaching out to them outside of when you have a deal?
I try to reach out every couple of weeks with some educational material based on what's happening in the market and what we're seeing out there, and letting them know that we are managing our properties as efficiently as possible and keeping them informed of where we're at and what's happening. The worst thing you could do is not communicate. I know when the people I've invested in, when I don't get communication from them on what the performance of the property is or what's going on, my mind goes, it's got to be going the wrong direction because they're not sharing anything with me because they're only going to share when it's good news. Why don't you share all the news? I just had a call with Sandhya yesterday afternoon, and we just need to continue to share information that's going on with the property. Just because you stop distributions, that doesn't mean that everything's going the wrong direction. It's just preservation of capital and making sure that you can continue to ride out the storm that we're in. I mean, we are in winter, and winter doesn't last forever, and spring is on its way. And when spring hits, we're all going to be really happy.
Did you say that you passively invested before you got to Brad's ecosystem?
I started investing in Brad's ecosystem passively.
That's where you started.
Correct.
Okay, cool. What did you like about some of the investments that you were in terms of communication, and what did you learn so that you could not make those same mistakes?
I learned this in my ATM business that I need to be in front of my clients regularly. So when a regulatory thing came up that where people would have to spend more money to upgrade their equipment or do this or that, then you have to continually communicate. Otherwise, they're not sure you're actually bringing them the truth. So communication in any business, I believe it's in every business, is key.
I recently heard that Brad's been giving a lot more attention to raising capital outside of his ecosystem. Have you noticed anything about him teaching? Are you still part of that program?
I'm still part of his program, and I'm still yearning for more education on the capital raising side because I don't know everything. Me and my wife and I say, we've done this really well on accident, and now we want to do it on purpose. So I've actually hired a team to help build out my website, landing pages, do some webinars, education, continuing to just keep helping people out and trying to grow it or grow my base organically to expand my abilities to raise capital.
How did you put this team together? Are they paid employees or are they equity partners?
They're a paid service.
Is it a service that already works with other capital raisers, or is it something you put together yourself?
It's something I put together myself. I have a handful of VAs that are helping me with video content, social stuff that I'm not having to pay an exorbitant amount of money on until I find out what exactly is going to work. And when something works, then I'll invest a lot more.
Very cool, man. All right, brother. Did you also create an avatar for yourself? I'm curious who that is. Or are you just reaching out to all of your existing database?
I've sort of created an avatar. It's like the business owner that is too busy working in their business that they're not working on their business and has more cash flow and more taxes than they want to actually deal with. So we're trying to get in front of those kind of people that are making a good $250,000 a year or more so that they have some deployable income that they're looking to grow. That's my avatar. I could probably go more granular, but I'm not sure I should.
As you're scaling your capital raising business and doing it with purpose now, what are some of your marketing techniques to educate and nurture your audience? Are you going on social media? Are you doing a lot of podcasts? Do you have your own podcast or anything like that?
I do not have my own podcasts. I am trying to get on as many podcasts as possible, get my name out there. I'm in front of a lot of capital raising communities like your show and Tim Mize and Hunter Thompson's and a bunch of other people that are in this space. And I'm trying to learn from everybody. And I think every time you put yourself out there, you're going to learn another nugget. And if you put those, start stacking your nuggets and implementing that action, you're going to get where you're going. I see so many people, they buy a book, they watch a video, they show up at a thing and they think, oh, I was here. It's just going to happen. What happens is nobody implements. You see a room. I mean, I was literally at a conference and there was a room of 1,000 people. I was talking to the person next to me and I go, 20% or less of us are going to take anything from this conference and actually implement it. That's what happens. And they wonder why it's not working, why it's not growing.
They are not working. They are not growing.
Right. If it was easy, everyone would do it.
Mm-hmm. That's actually the beautiful thing about being involved in a hard business is that you can create opportunity from it. And you don't have to worry about as much competition as if it were easy, because like you said, everybody would be doing it. The fact that it's challenging gives us the chance to make money at it because other people are not willing. That's actually why we got into development. Not a lot of people are interested in learning the development side. All right, cool, man. Let's jump into the lightning round. Let's start with this. Best vacation you've ever taken.
We went to Santorini and Mykonos about a year and a half ago.
Ooh, that sounds like a blast. Favorite book of any kind?
Think and Grow Rich.
Excellent. Do you have a favorite chapter in there or anything particular that you like about Napoleon Hill? Oh,
goodness. I read it so long ago, but it just made me want more.
I love the chapter on auto-suggestion. I think that's my favorite. How about this? How much of your success has to do with your mindset?
100% on my mindset.
How long do you want to live?
85.
Do you have any hacks for breaking through limiting beliefs?
My saying is, when you can't, you must.
Oh, that sounds like Tony Robbins.
Where do you think I learned it?
He's one of my mentors too. I love Tony Robbins. All right. Biggest difference between who you are now versus who you were in high school?
Oh my goodness. The confidence that I have today is by far a lot further along. You know, what's funny is I still see myself a little bit as an introvert when I go into a room and I don't know anybody. But as soon as somebody starts talking to me, it's like I can talk to everybody. Everybody would tell me, they go, you're not an introvert. You're not afraid to be in a room. I am, until I actually start talking. Because when you don't know anybody, you don't know how they're going to receive you. And then you have to understand how they want to hear you. And you have to speak in their language. Mm-hmm. So that they will understand what I'm trying to say. Because I can't go out and tell people, well, I'm going to talk about IRR, depreciation, tax benefits, bonus depreciation, blah, 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 and expect them to understand. I have to actually speak in their language so then we can actually have a conversation.
Yeah, I think a lot of capital raisers are like that, where if you're talking about something that the capital raiser is interested in, like real estate or whatever hobbies they have really easy time talking, sometimes maybe for 24 hours straight about something that they're passionate about. But then you put those same people inside of a room, maybe like a family barbecue or something, and there's not as much to talk about. Or if you go to like a restaurant or a party or something and you don't know anybody, it's very different than when you have something to talk about that you really like. How about this, man? Best way to raise capital from your perspective? Short answer on this.
Share your experience and how you got to where you're at.
Very good. All right. So I'm curious about the skiing that you do. What do you love best about skiing?
You're out there just gliding on the snow. It's just you and the snow and it's quiet. There's no interruption. You're just out there floating. I was actually thinking about this last week when I was in Park City with Brad Sumrock and a few other people in my in the ecosystem. We're just out there having a good time. He's doing his thing. I'm doing my thing. And we're all just out there enjoying the great outdoors. And I was trying to understand whoever thought of this and thought it would be fun. And then they clear these huge hills of all these trees just for us to go out there and have a great time.
That's fantastic. What kind of skiing do you like? Is it through the trees? Do you like to go downhill? You like to do jumps or terrain or anything like that?
If you'd have asked me 20 years ago, I was a jumper like there was no other. I loved to do jumps and helicopters and daffies and flips and everything else. And today I like the bumps for like three or four runs just to burn up my legs. But I really like more steep, flat terrain because I have a need for speed.
Okay. And then where's your favorite place to go skiing?
Ooh, great question. I grew up skiing in Colorado and I'm going back to Vail next week. We just skied Park City for the first time and oh my God, what a beautiful, beautiful place. It's so beautiful. My wife's like, we're going back before the end of the year. So we already have friends that were going and they just invited us. Literally, we have a house come up and I just look at my wife and go, we're going. And she's like, I'm in.
How fun. All right. How about this? Do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
I believe God is involved in everything that I do. And I don't think that I'd have been able to raise the amount of money I raised in the short period of time if he didn't have my back.
Awesome. Have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
I've never had a near-death experience. I don't believe I've ever seen a miracle. I literally was on virtual yesterday with a good friend of mine, Pete Vargas. His wife, they were in the mountains Sunday for the Super Bowl. And on their way home, they got a call from the doctor and she's getting a brand new kidney today. So that was amazing. And oh my God, the prayers that went down yesterday for them and how that came together. It was incredible. So it wasn't my miracle, but I got to hear about a miracle that had just happened recently.
Well, I guess it just depends on what your perspective is, because some people think that just being alive is a miracle. How about last question of the day, brought to you by Shanna Amigo, one of our great listeners. She would like to know, what impact would you like to leave in the world?
I'd like to leave the world a better place than I came in, and I want to help as many people as possible. That's why I'm buying apartments, because I like to give back. If I can help more people have nice, safe, affordable places to live, to me, that's heaven on earth.
Beautiful. All right. Great answers on the lightning round. Thanks for entertaining us on that. Shout out to the Capital Raiser Nation. Thanks for tuning in. Please leave us a 5-star written review. And shout out to Legacy Acquisitions, my company, and our sponsors, Syndication Pro, the Family Office Club, and PitchDex.com. Check out their deals at thecapitalraisershow.com. Mike, how does the audience get a hold of you, my friend?
If you want to reach out to me or learn anything about what I'm doing, you can reach me on my cell phone at 509-270-6701, or my email here in the bottom left-hand corner, Mike, it's Michael at CypressAdvantage.com, or reach out to me on my property's website, fill out the little form, and we'll reach back to you as soon as possible.
Very good stuff. Tell us a little bit about your ATM business.
So we started the ATM business on my wife's credit card, literally in 1997. We bought our first ATM machine, put it in a nightclub in San Francisco owned by Rob Schneider, the comedian, and drained our bank account of all $2,000. And we'd go there on Friday and Saturday nights and watch ourselves make $2.50 a transaction. And we turned that one ATM machine over the last 27 years into a little over 7,000 units across the whole United States. We've been running that fairly efficiently for the longest period of time. We have 4 employees on that business, and I was one of them. So actually, we're down to 3 since I no longer work there. But we've been operating that business for that long. We've not acquired anybody. It's all been organic growth through word of mouth and taking care of people.
Cool. Is there any similarities between what you do and what some of these other syndicators do when they raise money for ATMs?
The syndicators that raise money for ATMs are actually aggregating that cash to go out and buy companies like mine to grow their business. And I'm actually very familiar with the folks that raise the capital and syndicate these. I'm good friends with the people that they raise capital for. It's another company out of Pennsylvania. And they're just trying to grow to a certain size so then they can have an amazing exit with a big, huge synergy of a lot of ATMs and a lot of transactions.
Fascinating. So there's not tax benefits like they have when they invest in or when they syndicate multifamily. And then, but a cash flow is pretty ridiculously. And then I guess the life of these ATMs is only like, it's finite, right? So it runs maybe 5-6 years, and then they have to replace them and that's it. The cash flow goes away and then you cash out. Is that pretty much the way it is?
I've had ATM machines that I still own today that have been in the ground for the last 20 years. So I'm not sure that they run out at any point in time. I'm not sure how that program works 100%. But I do know that on the syndication side, they're giving you 100% bonus depreciation year one for the amount of capital you put in.
Really?
Yes, they are. And then they have a pretty decent return on cash over the 5 or 6, 7 year period of the contract. I'm not sure how that whole thing works because I'm not in that space and I don't have those agreements. If you're going to syndicate ATMs, you might want to syndicate that. Reach out to those folks or Google it and figure out exactly what they're doing and how you're going to get your money back.
Yeah. Talk to your CPA because I was obviously misinformed. Very cool. All right. Do you have any last words of wisdom for the aspiring capital raiser and or multifamily syndicator as they scale in their journey?
Keep your focus on what you're doing. Always continue to work hard and continue to reach out and make new friends. Even if it's in the produce aisle at your local grocery store, you never know when you're going to reach out to somebody and they're going to become your next $1 million investor.
Well, this has been fantastic, man. This has been really cool. I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing a little bit about your background, man. This has been a blast.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it and look forward to coming back sometime.